there's a lot of flexibility. The season turnover is not the same old thing every day. There's a lot of advantages to keeping your mind intact, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That may be the main thing.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me. What is your opinion of the bonus rule?
As it existed then?
Yes, yeah, the required 2 years captivity.
I really didn't think that was the right approach. I can understand how it got written into the business, you know, but today's shenanigans with salaries and negotiations and free agency and everything else, arbitration, make that look like, you know, nothing.
Right.
That was supposed to be an attempt, I guess, to hold the teams back from indulging themselves or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that was like nothing. You know, today's atmosphere, if a team wants to spend $100,000 or $200,000 or $1 million or whatever it might be today, so what? You know, they're doing it. I'm not saying it's smart, but I don't know if that strength was.
Were you aware, and this is rumored a lot, and nobody who received under the table money is going to say they did, but a lot of fellas say that they heard that there was considerable, or not considerable, but some under the table payments made where maybe Uncle Ed got the money and the board was sent to the miners or something like that. Were you aware of any of that or heard rumors about it?
I had no first-hand knowledge of any of that. You used to hear that from other ball players, which I think is maybe an invention of somebody's mind. I'm sure it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
College of basketball, baseball, football, all the time. So, you know, what's the benefit of having an investment? But I didn't know of anybody that.
Okay. There were a lot of ways to get around that, and I think probably as soon as the rule was passed, the general managers and owners were planning on ways of circumventing it, and a lot of them were. I guess a lot of the teams went straight at it and did it the way the rule said too.
I never had any proposal to that, you know, from other teams.
Uh-huh.
Nothing was ever mentioned with regard to doing something that wasn't.
I ask you a question. Would the Phillies and Red Sox, were either one of those interested in you?
Not really. At a later date, when I was in Milwaukee in 61, some of the Brave management had moved down to Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
And Danisek, Stout included. John Quinn was over there, a few others. And anyway, I was told at that time that they would be vitally interested in picking me up if I was out on the waiver. And obviously I was in 62 and I never heard from them.
Huh.
So much.
Okay. The reason I asked,
both
those teams were very active, it seems, in the scouting of the young players. And always talked bonus, but seemed to come up with very, very little money when it came time actually to accomplish something. I'd say probably half the fellows I've spoken with were scouted by one or both of those teams, and nothing ever came of it.
Detroit was big in my mind prior to signing, not necessarily from wanting to sign, but knowing that they were out there and were willing to pay.
Yeah, they were probably, next to the Orioles, the most vigorous of all the teams in signing the young player.
In fact, they were involved with some what I thought was either quasi-illegal or illegal, because when I was in college, they approached me on-site in a locker room after a game. We played over in East Lansing.
Oh, boy.
And the coach turned his back and when it happened. And I did not think that was proper at all.
No. And I guess if it's not seen.
Well, right, and it was a person who I later had to deal with, you know, John McHale,
mm-hmm.
Was at Detroit at the time. I guess that affected my feelings, you know, even talking with him later on, because I knew people doing that very easily.
Yeah, it makes you think anyhow.
Yeah, right.
Well, did the bonus rule, this is a strictly opinion, there's no way for you to know, but did you think the bonus rule or the captivity hurt you?
Interesting question. Probably yes, from the standpoint that if I had been signed and probably taken on to A-ball and made the next step appropriately a couple of years, that probably would have been a smarter approach.
Mm-hmm.
But that's hard to say because it isn't that you don't learn things at the major league level, you know, being around. You do probably lose some of the edge on your skills if you're on playing, and you have no way of improving them.
Right. Stagnation is
the
biggest complaint, I think, that the
right. Just coming right out of college where I've been active for, you know, seasons anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This probably, in retrospect, was a drawback.
This is a question that may be impossible to answer. Well, first, let me preface it. I talked with Jim Cott because he was one of the few, there may have been others, but one of the few that I was aware of, who was offered a bonus but chose not to take it so he could go to the minors. This was advice of his father and somebody else. And he signed for the, you know, for the $4,000 or whatever the top dollar he could receive, and then went to the minors. He didn't take the they offered him considerably more. But this was the same year you signed in '57, and he of course couldn't foresee the end of the bonus rule. Nobody could. But on advice, he did that, and he said that if he were to go back, he would do that again. He would still choose to go to the minors. Would you, again, a possible question, but would you do this again? Would you take the money and join the major league team?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and one that I've had other people ask me that too. I don't know if I can answer that fairly for you because it is an interesting
thing. Right.
But I'd like to think that would be possible, and I'd like to think that it would have been advantageous as far as a long-term career.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. That's my own personal
thing. Yeah, well, there's no way to know, of course. Just
right.
Basically just trying to get a feeling.
I played against him in 1960. A few guys were getting hit from him.
Mm-hmm.
Left-handed pitcher, and he was still learning his trade.
Yeah. He learned it well.
He did, and he's looking, you know, backwards in retrospect, and this probably makes more sense to him.
Right.
But if he had washed out and whatever he might have said to himself, he would have had the money. You know? That's the thing that a lot of people were putting in my mind, I'm sure other people too. What do you got to lose? You know? Well, you got to lose possibly the chance of long-term playing in major leagues, which could be a bigger benefit.
It's awful hard, though, for a 19, 20, 21-year-old young man to have more money than he ever imagined waved under his nose.
Well, right. And I can remember my dad saying, you know, that's more money I made in 20-something years.
Mm-hmm.
And you get encouragement, well, you know, you want to be doing something bigger and better than what I did. Coach is telling you, look, these guys want you. It's their money, they do what they want with it. What's the difference? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard not to bend to that.
Yes, I can. Very few could not withstand the temptation,
right.
I'm sure.
Not that you don't have, you know, reservations about it. We discussed it heavily a number of times with people. You still got to make a decision.
Right.
You hope you can just fly right by that.
Very few could.
Right.
Do you still hear from the fans back from your playing days?
Yeah, I get card autograph seekers, I would say, every week or so I get something, you know, I just let it pile up for a couple of months. And I, you know, to take care of them. I'm not into the autograph for cash money like I see a number of people are.
That's big business.
Yeah, I just don't understand that, I guess.
It's hard to understand, but I spoke with Tim Pagliarone a few weeks ago. He was a bonus baby, and he's very, very active now in the financial plight of former ball players, and he's working to try to better it. And there is a lot, and it's a figure that I don't remember what he said. Now, 48%, I believe he said, of the ball players pre-1960. Now, don't quote me on these figures because I've got it all down on paper somewhere, but I can't remember right off the top of my head. But 48% are in financial straits.
Really?
And that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. That's a little scary.
And he says that although he himself doesn't see the signing for the money, he says they actually encourage it for these fellows. If they get $500 autograph requests a year and they can get $2 a piece, that's $1,000 that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Right, and I don't begrudge anybody that under the circumstances. Fortunately, mine necessarily aren't that way at this time. I feel that's something I go to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's autograph.
That's a lot of problems. I do a lot of interviews for magazine, and a lot of the guys, I guess the guys who consent to give interviews are the nicer guys anyhow. I guess the hard noses that don't sign autographs, I don't want to talk about either. But this is what a whole lot of them say. They say that most of them owe considerably what they have today to the fact that they play baseball, and they think it's a cheap repayment.
Well, right, and I might think differently if something were to fall in my lap. That, it would be monumentally, financially sound thing to do. But I don't go out seeking card shows. Occasionally, someone will call me, and if it works out fine, I don't go out of my way to do that. A few times I've been there, it's a cash deal, which is kind of sneaky to begin with. You walk in, they bump you a few bucks in your hand, and a couple hours of signing, and you're gone. And geez, I mean, what does this mean? I just don't look.
Well, the IRS is getting tighter on those.
How's that?
Here in Lexington, one of the fellows here in town I know has a card shop, and he goes to local card shows, and he says that for the last year, I guess, he says that somebody from the state Revenue Commission, I don't know about the national, but from the state, has come by at the card shows and gone up to each dealer and given them forms to fill out. So I don't know what they do about the autograph guests, which they have here, but I take my kids, and I've got a little boy, I take him occasionally, but I don't really know enough what's going on. But, maybe they're doing that with the players who are signing, too, now, at least here in Kentucky. And I guess somebody, not to denigrate your career, but you're not Hank Aaron, you're not getting enough to where maybe they would justify, but these guys like DiMaggio and Mays who they're commanding $20-$30 for their signature, and that's got to add up to a whole bunch of money.
Well, I would think so, and I get lists from agents, explaining what the value of so-and-so's autograph is, and how they want to sign it. Contractor or agent or whatever. And I don't have enough of that to begin with. Not that kind of demand by any means. I don't mind writing a few autographs.
Mm-hmm.
On their way.
Yeah. That's a good attitude.
That's no big deal. Once in a while I get a packet full of stuff and get around to doing that. I'll take care of it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I'd like to hear that. Okay, John, I think that pretty much wraps up. Let me ask you a couple more questions first. You have been an excellent interview. A lot of the guys you started out, you said that, what I can remember. And this is what I get from a lot of fellows. The answers are yes, no, and don't remember. And it's real hard to get an interview out of that. You have really done a great job, and I appreciate it. And as I said, I do send interviews into a magazine. Would you mind if I use this for a magazine interview?
In what respect?
Well, just an interview with former Bonus Baby John DeMeritt, and all the things we went into with the bonus stuff will not be in the interview because that's not what I was doing it for. I was going to that's going to be in a book.
What magazine is this?
It's called Sports Collector's Digest, and it's for people who collect baseball, well, sports memorabilia. One of the side effects is you would get an increase in the number of autograph requests for a period of a few weeks.
Well, I have no big problem with that.
Okay.
Nothing here is any big secret that we've talked about.
Well, I will send you, if I did submit this to the magazine, before I submit it, I will send you a copy of it so you can see what it is.
Okay.
I don't like to put anything in print until the subject.
I appreciate that because I don't think everybody involved with this kind of stuff would say go over that length.
Yeah, well, it's most of the time, and you haven't said anything that I think would be a problem, but I've thought this in the past, and the fellows speak, and they don't realize what they're saying until they read it. One fellow said that he didn't think Ralph Kiner belonged in the Hall of Fame because Kiner couldn't beat a fly ball down if he had a bushel basket. And he read that, and he said, Kiner's a friend of mine. I just assume not have that in black and white, and ask me to change it. And that's things like that. And I think it's only a common courtesy to let people see what you're saying about them before you say it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's a lot of room for negative stuff about anybody. If we were talking about, and this is the subject isn't what